Good morning, everybody. This is a workshop on fathering teenagers. I'm glad you're here. Hopefully we can have some beneficial time in the Word today and maybe learn something. If you have a question anytime you want to ask, just ask. I mean, this is not going to be real formal, I don't think, you know, so and discuss. But let's begin with a word of prayer and then we'll dig in here. Father, we come to you today just thankful for you and what you've done for each one of us, Father. And I pray as we come to study and talk about fathering teens in our world today, Father, I pray you would impart wisdom to these men. Father, I know they need it so much in the world that we live. And I just pray for their children. I just pray that they would be protected today while they're away. I pray that you would allow their families to prosper while they're gone, to spend time with you, Father. And I pray as we spend this time together that you would meet with here with us. Thank you. Amen. The thing is about fathering teenagers, you can find a lot of literature and talk a lot of things, but I don't think there's anybody an expert at fathering teenagers, okay? I'm a learner. Actually, I guess I could say I'm a graduate. I have two daughters who are no longer teenagers, but you still never stop being a parent to your children. I think your role changes a lot, you know, as you go along, especially in teenage years, but you never stop being a father. I'm fortunate I have actually two daughters and a daughter that adopted us, and I say that lovingly because we actually did have a young lady come to our home one Sunday and said, "Can I come live with you?" At 17 years of age, she had a home in which she no longer could live. And so I've had some of those sudden things dropped on me, so I understand that too a little bit. And we might talk about a little bit that about trying to minister to a young lady whose family had just completely come apart. So I've had a few things there. But I fortunately have one daughter who's 24 who's out on her own right now. She's a CPA, and she's auditing and working in Oklahoma. My youngest daughter, she's at OSU studying nutrition and hopes to go to optometry school. And then our adopted daughter, she's at Northeastern studying political science. I think the biggest thing, you know, is I think I would start out to say is, you know, parenting. We tend to talk about parenting right now, but parenting is a partnership. And the thing is, I'm very blessed with a wife who we very well, you know, have the same values and those kind of things, but we parent together very well. A lot of times we understand without even speaking. We know what each other's thinking. And so in that area, I think it's very blessed. And really think about a partnership and with your wife, because that's very important. Because your wife, you definitely need to learn to listen to your wife. That's the best thing I ever learned, because your wife will help you. Your wife picks up on things, especially like for me, for daughters, pick on things that I, you know, just don't get, you know, and maybe those kind of things. And she's really tuned in. My wife is very tuned in, you know, on things like that, you know, typically you may not be able to get. But so think about it that, you know, it is a partnership with you and your wife, or maybe some of you might be a single parent. But if you do have a wife, it makes a huge difference. The other thing is your relationship with God, and if you're at this conference, I think you're desiring to work on that. You know, for me, that's probably made it the easiest, but we'll get into that. But look at the scriptures. There's not a lot, you know, talking about parenting teenagers. I mean, you know, definitely you know that Jesus was a teenager, you know, because the one point in the scriptures, you know, where he was left the temple, they'd gone to the temple, you know, and his parents left him, and 3 days later on their way back home, they figure out he's not there, and they come back looking for him. And they come to the temple, and they start asking him questions, and the first thing out of his mouth is, "Why?" So he was definitely a teenager. But, I think on parenting teenagers is the biggest thing, you're going to need wisdom. And I think you really like in the book of Proverbs, especially, we'll talk about that later, but, you know, I think you look at the first several chapters of Proverbs, you know, wisdom is something that talks about, you know, teaching your kids wisdom and those kind of things. And that's very important. But if you will, turn your Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter 6. And I'll read the first 10 verses, then we'll talk about some things that I see in the scriptures. Deuteronomy 6, verse 1. Now this is the commandment, the statutes, the judgments of which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you, that you might do them in the land which you're going to possess, so that you and your sons and your grandsons might fear the Lord your God and keep all his statutes and his commandments which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Oh, listen, O Israel, you should listen and be careful to do it, that you may be well with you, and you multiply greatly, just as the Lord your God of your fathers promised, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Verse 4, Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. Verse 7, You shall teach them diligently to your sons. You shall talk about them when you sit up in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and your gates. Then it shall come about as the Lord your God brings the land which he swore to your fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you great and splendid cities which the Lord did not, which you did not build. You know, and think about this. And this Moses, you know, he's talking to him, you know, and he's given the law. You know, he's reiterated the law in chapter 5 and the Ten Commandments and those kind of things. But then he's reiterating to him to what in this scripture? To the fathers especially. What big things he want him to do. Yeah. Teach them. You know, and I think that's your role, especially, you know, with teenagers, you know. And I think you have to take those times to teach them, you know. And for me, I think, you know, as fathers, the biggest challenge you're going to have in today's society, you know, is time. And where you find that time and what you do with. You know, when I grew up, you know, as a young man on a dairy farm. So, you know, I mean, we got up at 4:30 with my dad. We milked cows, you know, and then at 7:30 we ate breakfast. And then we may went to school, you know, during the school year or the summer. And then we worked, you know, all day. So our parents, you know, we spent, you know, to the time I was 18 years old, you know, I'd spent thousands of hours with my dad, you know. And my dad probably is my closest friend, you know. But my dad was first my parent, you know. But there's so many things, you know, that you can't put a value on that you teach your children, you know, just by observation, how your dad presents himself, those kind of things, you know. And that's it, you know. Now, our society today, you know, like me, you maybe have a job in town, those kind of things, but you're going to have to spend time, you know, the power of presence. I think that's the biggest struggle you want to have, but, you know, I think God will be faithful in your relationship. If you ask for wisdom, that God will give you that wisdom, how to do that, you know, and your schedule and those kind of things, but that's it, you know. I mean, it's because there's, in years past, you know, they talked about, and you read a lot of books, they talk about quality time versus quantity time, but most of them will say, even in a book by Shepherding Fathers by Timothy Whitner, it's a very good book. If you want to read, I think it's got some good insights. It's a very short book, good to read. It will give you some of that. And then some of the ideas I've got in here, I got out of that. But he talks about quality time versus quantity time. But the thing is, on quality time, before you can get quality time, you've got to spend the quantity. And you know, I mean, for me, for daughters, I mean, just for that, you know, one of the things that I found to do is I learned to cook. You know, with my daughters, like, you know, my wife and so those kind of things, you know, is you had to come home from work. You know, we ate a meal together, and that's probably one of the easiest things you do. We came home, and I don't know what your schedule is, but in our situation at home, we always ate together. What's one of the things I learned to do is cook to help my wife, you know, especially during busy times of year. She's a CPA. So usually from like January 1st to March, I mean, April 15th, that was my role, you know. And what we did with our daughters is we didn't let them go sit in front of the couch and watch TV. You get them in the kitchen with you, and you learn to cook with them. And I really think, you know, that's probably the best investment I ever made. It made me, part of that, you know, it made me grow as a person. You know, I wasn't a great cook, but I've learned to cook. And, you know, and serve your daughters, and like for me or your sons or whatever it might be. Now it's different, but, you know, that time I think has been invaluable. You know, because I think by doing that, I'll just give an example. My oldest daughter went for a job interview, you know. The thing is, so you spend all those times together, but, you know, she calls me and she's about 5 minutes from a job interview. And she says, Dad, I don't know what to do, you know. And I said, part of that, you know, is like, I just told her, Katie, you're fine. You sit down and you be yourself. And you allow God to speak through you and you'll be fine. You know, I mean, but the only way I got that phone call was by quantity of time. And you know, I don't know how many hours I spent, you know, in those days, but that's what it's going to be. And that's probably going to be the biggest struggle for any and all of you. It was for me and still is, but that's the principle I think you really have to focus in on. And there's any number of activities, you know, you might do. What would that be some? Anybody? With sons?
Hunting.
What else?
School project.
School project. Very good. Just think, you know. And
camping.
There you go. The other thing is like, too, on vacations, the other thing is like what we as a family have done. Instead of like going somewhere and doing necessarily staying, what we like to go rent a house for a week. You want to go to Colorado, we go rent a house for a week, and we spend that time in a house together. Play games, you know, those kind of things. And that's some of the most memorable times that I've had with my daughters is just to get away. And that's probably one of the most maximum times because you can do that. And we may go rafting, you know, some of that. Last summer we went to Colorado, you know, and we stayed on a river, got a cabin on a river, and we just spent time together, get up together. You know, we didn't necessarily have an agenda to really spend that time, you know, not travel. We just got to go to one place, stay for 1 week, and just spend it together. I think those are some of the things that maybe you have it. And there's no substitute for it, you know. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it has to be elaborate. It's just time together, okay? Any questions or any thoughts? We're all in process, so, you know, I'm just trying to challenge what you think.
How do you inject God's stuff when you work with your either son or daughter on the job, like on the weekend job? How do you do that?
Casually? Well, what I did, I'm a veterinarian and I practice. So most of the time what I would do, you know, sometimes you have calls on weekend, take them with me. You know, take them on the farm call. Take them to the clinic with you and interact, you know, and watch you work and interact with people. Because that's invaluable. The other thing, probably thing, is one of the smartest things I ever did was go serve your city together. A friend of mine started a teen center in our city. And so I got involved with him as that project to help him because we were close friends and he asked me to help. And so we did some of that. But some of those kind of things, probably one of the wisest things I did was when available on weekends, take your daughters with you. We painted, we cleaned floors, we picked up trash, you know, spent time together. It wasn't a lot of time, you know, it was over probably a year period, you know, one or two Saturdays a quarter, you know, those kind of things like that. I think that's really invaluable, giving to others if you can.
You said a good thing that they serve your community. I remember when I started serving the Lord, you know, my first thing was door-to-door.
Yes.
And I took my 15-year-old son with me. We bonded real good. We both told each other, are you nervous? This was our first time doing this, spreading the word to the community. And we both shared being nervous together. And
yes.
That's what brought us together. You know, so, going door to door and spreading the word of God, you know.
Yes.
That was a real good thing. That was a good thing.
Yes, very much so. That time, too, you know, the other thing is that at my church, they were involved in student ministry, you know, so we did student ministry and spent a lot of time with students, you know, ministering to other students, you know. The other thing is did sometimes we brought ministry to our home. Usually in the summer, like, you know, our church didn't necessarily have a lot of activities, so we just said, okay, here's our house. We were fortunate we lived in the country and had a lot of room. We'd have 90 students at our home every Wednesday night for 10 or 12 weeks, you know. Have you interact with students, you know, and those kind of things. And that's another invaluable time, you know, that opening your home and just being there for people, you know. And you've seen you interact with other teens and those kind of things. I think that builds a bond, and they understand that, you know, I think it helps not only their relationship with God, but understanding ministry to other students, you know, or their peers in those kind of situations. And you can't, you know, I don't know, it's just really, it's a lot of it is about koinonia or fellowship, and those, and in fellowship with their peers in a non-threatening setting, you know, especially in a setting outside of church, it makes a huge difference. it makes a huge difference to them and you, I think. Okay? Any other questions or thoughts? Okay, well, the amazing thing, you know, especially about verse 7, you know, it talks about, you know, you shall teach them diligently your sons and talk about them when you sit in the house, when you rise up, walk the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. What part of the day is not included in there? Yeah, well, by the time when you sleep, probably, when you lie down and you rise up. You know, and that's kind of thing is, most of those opportunities, you know, the most teachable moments I've ever got with at least my teenagers were, it probably wasn't convenient, but they had a question about, you maybe sit down and read the paper, you've had a long day, you've worked, maybe been outside, those kind of things, and you sit down, you've got to be there. And sometimes that's a difficult thing, and you know, that's one of the things I learned, too, is in those times together, you sit down, and usually when it was least convenient for you is when they want to talk. And so you've got to learn to turn your business side off, or you came home, and whatever your day, and turn it off and be receptive to them. I think that's the biggest problem, and I really am blessed. I have two daughters I virtually had no trouble out of. I mean, probably the one thing that you have is teenagers, you got to think of, if they're not teenagers yet, when that 13 hits, they're going to try their mother. That's probably one universal thing they'll do in the home, at least in my experience. Both my daughters did it to me. You know, they turn 13 and then they want to start back talking to their mother. And that's the one thing for me. You know, I didn't have to necessarily discipline, but, you know, you take them to the other room and said, this is not going to be allowed. And I think from then on, being the parent, you're so many things today in our society today that they say the parents want to be their children's friends. You can't be their friend. You got to be their parent. But ultimately, I think the friendship comes, like my daughters, now that they're out and grown, the friendship has grown. And biggest thing, too, about that is, you know, you have competing things going. You as the father want to be in control and kind of their environment, some of the things they do. You know, the amazing thing, the only rule I ever had in my home is no whining. That's the only rule I had. I had very few rules. Because when they were, you know, when they were preteens, it was so good, you know, easy to come. But, you know, that. But you're going to have that deal. Like, when you want them to be more and more independent, and you're more and more less involved in their decision making. And keep that in mind. Whereas you're trying to let control go, and I'll tell this story as an example. Like, my oldest daughter, after she got her interview, and then she actually accepted the job, or she said they offered her the job, and then she waits a day or so, and she calls her mother and says, I've been offered the job, and this was about a year ago. I've been offered the job. I don't know whether I'm going to take it, but her mother said, okay, I want to discuss this. You know, she's got a week to turn it back. Well, then the next day, her daughter calls her and says, I accepted the job. It's like, but her mother had to stop and say, you know, she was like, man, I wish she'd have talked to me about that. But yet, she'd come to that point where she felt comfortable enough that she knew what she wanted to do and she accepted the job. But, you know, her mother's like, no, I really want to say, have some input about where she's going to do. But, you know, then her mother decides, you know what, that's a good thing, you know, because she has. So you keep that in mind at all times. And we'll get to some other things about that when we get to Ephesians. But I think that's the biggest thing to keep in mind. You know, you want to give them independence as you go along. And the part of things like that, the biggest thing, you know, is I don't know where you're at. Most of you have teens yet, or you, teens coming, or both? Both? Both, okay. All right, you know, well, the thing is, you know, most likely, if you've got preteens, you know, those, you've invested in them enough when they get to be teens that you, an issue comes up, you know, you need to discuss it. Deal with it right then if you can. And if you can't, you know, deal with it as soon as possible, you know, as far as that goes. You have to be able to do that. But, you know, keep that relationship open because it's all about relationship, you know, right? It really is, you know, because relationship, you know, you got to, I think that's really where, at least, and with my daughters, the relationship is always open. You know, it's like those things. You've got to keep that time and know your children. And like where you're at, you know. So the other thing is like, you know, especially if you got one that's 13 and they're not going to leave for six more years, you got a lot more time, right? But you got to value where you're at, you know, and I think that's something you have to do as you go along the way. And it's not anything that, I don't know, annually do or whatever you might do, but you've got to evaluate where you're at. Where am I at right now? And I think probably when you think about your team, where am I at now and how much time do I have? And I think evaluate your team. One is about, you know, especially I think probably the biggest thing, like on your youngest daughter, when she was about 16, her maturity wasn't ready. She's got 2 years to go to college. I mean, that's the example. You know, my wife and I, we both discussed the maturity is not here. What can we do to increase that? You know, and I mean, we discussed it and we talked about it. We prayed about it, you know, and the things we decided that she needed an after-school job for 2-3 hours to get her out of her house. She'd been very, maybe sheltered, maybe too much, but, you know, those. I think you got to always be thinking, where am I at and how much time do I have? Yes?
You had mentioned making them dependent.
Yes.
Independent.
Yes.
Where do you draw the fine line, and how do you bother to teach the fact that being independent does not mean that you don't need to be interdependent, you know, depending on others and depending on God? You know,
yes.
We raise our kids to do things by themselves, and me as a father, even in my personal life, I have a hard time. I try to do everything myself.
Yes. Yeah. Well, being a man, you know, you want to be independent, you know, and we think we're independent, but yeah, you know, we really are dependent. And I think part of that is, I think you give them the independence, but trust them, but verify. I think some of that, you know, is, so especially on rules or like that, you know, as long as you feel like you can trust them, they can, if they ask, if they can go with their friends, those kind of things, you allow that. But, you know, I mean, you know, when they're, say, 12 or 13, they're 13, okay, they're going to go spend some time with their friend. But where are you going? How long are you going to be there? Those kind of things. You start out with that, you know, but as they grow older, they ask you if they can go, and the answer is not just no. But there's times you may need to say no. And the thing is a lot of it, you know, is like presentation, you know. In other words, when you say no to something, it's not like, I'm just saying no to say no. There, you know, I say no because there may be any number of reasons. One, it's a school night. Maybe you don't want them to. Those, you know, there's kind of boundaries I think you have to look for. And there's a book by Townsend and Cloud on boundaries and setting that. But I think the clarity of the thing is it depends on age. I think it's a moving target. Remember that. Does that help?
I like that. Trust but verify.
Trust but verify. I mean, absolutely trust them. You know, I mean, and I think that's the thing is, I think you tell them that up front. Until you prove to me I can't trust you, I'm going to trust you. And you have this, it's kind of like a dance or something, you know, where, you know, we're always moving, but always, you know, I think know your kids. That's the other thing is about from that time. I think if you get to that point and you know your, say, son or daughter, and that whatever they're asking, you know them. And if they give you clues where they're going to be doing something they're not supposed to be doing or those kind of things. So you have to trust them, but check up on them. They need to know that you're checking up on them. You're not just going to turn them loose. They're definitely trusted, but they are going to be, you're going to verify, trust and verify. And I think you let them know that. That moves on. I guess we'll talk about communication a little bit. Communication is, the thing is like too, communication is not only just conversation, but as you communicate, you know, try to thing is always try to keep your conversation open and listen. You know, the biggest thing is you have 2 ears, listen twice as much as you talk. I think most of the time if you truly listen to your teenager, you can get to the root of the problem. If you have some issue to resolve, you know, you're going to have to listen, you know, and communicate. And the things that are going on in life, and, you know, that's the thing is, you're going to have to be engaged. You know, our society, you know, the other thing is right now, you got so many things, media, cell phones, those kind of things. And that time together, I think, you know, whatever you find to do, you've got to learn to get those things pushed aside. And it's got to where, like, my daughters, I think if you have the relationship and the communication, you know, they're going to tell you what's going on, especially, and a lot of them are different. Like my youngest daughter, she's going to tell you. She comes home, it comes out. You know, I mean, if you want to know, it comes in. Now, the oldest one, you know, she's a lot more reserved and those kind of things. You know, she's not going to tell you. You have to almost pull it out of them, you know, ask the opening questions, those kind of things. That was probably the biggest frustration for my wife and my oldest daughter. You know, you talk to her and she just like, you could tell by her body language, she just shut down because her mother, you know, she kind of felt like she was being interrogated. Mom's trying to ask her, you know, well, let's say an example, you know, my wife, my oldest daughter was 14 and she wanted to try this particular like capri pants. And her mother talked to her and she couldn't do it. And I said, let me go talk to her. And I went and talked to her for about 10 minutes. And then they go shopping and she tries it on. My wife comes back and said, how did you do that? And I said, part of it is, you know, my wife not being mean, but she was trying to like, you need to do this. Well, it's kind of like push, you know, and I sit down and talk to her and, you know, you kind of got to, kind of like you can lead a mule to water, but can't make it drink. Well, like her, you had to talk to her in such a way that it's her idea. And part of it is I pleaded to her, do it for me to help your mother. And ultimately, that's what it did, and it worked. She goes down and she buys them, and those kind of things. So I got to think about that. You know, not only know, they're not all the same. You wish they were, but they're not. So remember, number one rule: all your teenagers aren't the same. All your children aren't the same. You know them, and especially if you don't, your wife can sure help you. Especially, you know, daughters, and it's amazing how much like two of them can be so much alike, but yet so different. But and how they approach the world and how they view things. And a lot of it, you know, is just their personality. You know, I mean, you know, the oldest daughter's more like her mother, just like her mother. I think if you learn to pick up on those qualities, it makes a huge difference. You know your son, don't you? Very well. I mean, you spend a lot of time together. So, you know, you've got to learn, especially I think that as a teenager, and you know, you'll learn, but you've got to be very astute on the situation, okay? And the biggest thing, if you have a problem you're trying to deal with, is don't focus on them. Focus on the problem, okay? Okay, so whatever it is, you know, they may come in late. You know, well, it's naturally you want to say, okay, I'm upset with you because you're late. You know, and you want to say it then, but, you know, it's not them you're focused on. It's, you know, it's on the behavioral problem. Whatever issue it might be, it's late, or maybe they're not cleaning their room, and those kind of things. And that's try to keep, it talks about Ephesians, and I'll jump over there. If you want to turn to Ephesians chapter 6, I'll just read the first few verses. Verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for that is right. Honor your father and mother, which is a commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you, and that you live a long life on the earth. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Okay, this is probably where this comes in, like communication is provocation. Part of that is one of the first ways probably to provoke your children to anger is they never measure up, right? Okay, your expectations are way too high. I have a family member who's done that. His son, whatever he did, just wasn't good enough. He finally gave up. That's the worst thing you can do. Like the standard is, he just had a lot of problems as a teenager, but, you know, he tend to get very angry at him and those kind of things. Well, at that point, part of that, instead of him being angry, I think, one, is you provoke them. One, is they probably become angry and they act out, but then they just give up. Your expectations, I think, is the first one. The next thing, you know, is kind of like, too, if you focus too much on them and not the behavior, because I think if you focus on them being wrong instead of the behavior being wrong, it provokes them to anger. And it very much sits on him because, you know, especially every time an issue came up between them, it became a shouting match. That's the worst place you can be because ultimately, you lose. Part of it is I think they lose their respect, right? It's not about behavior and those kind of things. You know, it's whatever they do. They maybe please you or they try to. The other one is by the person, you know, their behavior is you expect them to be perfect and they adhere to you versus understanding obedience is not just to you. It is also to God. I think kind of, It makes sense. In other words, like some children based on birth order, you know, like probably the oldest is going to be very obedient. You know, the other thing is understanding birth order. You know, the first child is usually one who they're going to be very structured. They're going to be very obedient. They want to please you. But if your standard and your rules and those kind of things, they may obey them, but then they become to resent you because of your expectations. So it's one thing that my wife and I, our kids excelled in academics, but we never pushed them, ever. I think that's one area. You can always push them to say, you know, you've got to do better, you got to do better, you got to do better. We never pushed them to do anything. I mean, they chose to. And part of that is, that this is another, I think, the biggest thing that helped us with our daughters, and it paid off. You know, I invested about $2,000 in both daughters, and they were in grade school. One of the biggest things, they had an accelerated reader program. I can't emphasize enough, if your teenagers don't like to read, you need to encourage that any way you can. But when they were in grade school, the oldest one, she was a good reader anyway, but you think, well, she's the top of the accelerated reader program. She had, the first year in fifth grade, she had about 800 points. Which, you know, they read a book, some books are 2 points, 1 point, but she had about 800 points. The nearest competition was 400. But the next year, she's reading, you know, she's got out to about, she's about 600 points, and it's about January, and she's got till May, you know, and she's just tired of reading. I said, all right, I'll make you a deal. If you'll surpass what you read last year in ARP points, I'll give you $1 a point. Wow. That cost me $950. But it was the best $950 I ever spent. Because she loves to read and those kind of things. And that's the other thing is, you know, it's probably that helped me. The thing is about that, too, is in their spiritual life and those kind of things, and then putting investment. The other thing is, I think it gives you also a connection to them. If they're reading books, what are you reading? What are you learning? You know, those kind of things out of those books. But the other thing also, you can also present books to them, whatever it might be, especially like a book on prayer on George Mueller. I mean, something like that. That's just an example. The thing is, the second daughter came along, and she did the same thing. I said, if you can beat your sister, I'll give you $1 a point. Well, the first year she beat her sister by 100 points, which was about 1,000, and the next year she beat her, and she did about 1,100. So I spent quite a bit of money, but that money was well invested. The reading, especially in you read and a lot of things about teenagers, you know, used to everybody thought almost all brain development was done by the time they're 5 or 6 years old. But now with the MRI technology and those kind of things, teenagers take a spurt when about there from 13 to 14, their brain development really comes quite a bit. So if you reading and education, those kind of things, I think encourage that, but don't push them. If you can do that, especially reading, both of my daughters wanted to read and those kind of things. And then we sent them to discipleship camp. You can go to Glen Eyrie, you know, have a discipleship camp. I just went blank on the name of it, but ours, we send them to Super Summer, which is a discipleship camp that Baptists have in Oklahoma every summer, and send them to that. And they spend a week at OBU, and they teach them, you know, a lot of things about quiet time, those kind of things, and it was really, really good investment. So I think, you know, those, and especially, you're probably, right now, the things that you have, like, because I didn't have the internet, which I would live out in the country, I didn't have internet at my house till probably 4 years ago, and I didn't have it in my business till 2 years ago. So internet wasn't a big thing in our home because we just didn't have access to it. But there's so many other things like that. Me, if they have a love of reading, most time my daughters come home, their thing was they got their homework done and they could do anything they wanted to. Most of the time they chose to read. And so I think that helps, and that gives you so many other things to talk to them about, to connect with them with, is the reading. And so now young men, I know that's a lot harder. I mean, I've had a few young men, you know, that are in high school. He didn't want to read, but one young man, you know, that I ministered to is actually the same age as my oldest daughter. I think the other things about those is give them books to read to stimulate their thought about the world and those kind of things. Especially this young man, I gave him the book, The World is Flat. He wouldn't read. I went and bought a copy of it and read it to him. You know, I just gave him to read it. Well, he started to understand, you know, the interconnection of the world and those kind of things. And since now this young man, he loves to read and those kind of things. He's actually going to be a student minister and those kind of things. So I think that's something to really think about. If your teenagers aren't reading, February the 7th of this month, there's a neurosurgeon, Dr. Benjamin Carlson. He spoke at a national prayer breakfast, and it was kind of an amazing thing about him was, if you got time, go watch it. He's an amazing Christian man. He spoke at a national prayer breakfast. He read several things out of Proverbs, but in that story he told about, he was growing up in Chicago and wasn't doing well. He was very poor. His mother couldn't read, and he was having a lot of trouble. And he told on there that his mother prayed for wisdom about how to get her sons. They were going the wrong direction, and she asked the Lord to give her wisdom on what to do. And it was an amazing thing was that she said, okay, you have to read 2 books a week and give me a written book report on them. And then they wrote them out and all that stuff. And he said it wasn't until later on that he actually even knew his mother couldn't read. She would put marks on them and highlight them different things and talk about them, hand them back to him. Like he was even saying, one of the biggest problems in our nation today is our lack of education. We don't stimulate our children's minds, especially you know, he was focusing on teenagers about how to really learn and those kind of things. And a lot of that is, I think you think about teenagers when they turn 13, all of a sudden, where did this child come from? You've lived with them all this time. But the thing is, their mind, their body, and everything, especially when the steroid hormones kick in, it's like they're kicked into overdrive. They're like an engine that you maybe have on, put on nitrous oxide. It's accelerating, and so there's lots of change and those kind of things. And so you don't be surprised when those things happen because they're actually trying to, they're changing, but I think you have to think about the best way you can relate to them. And part of that, you know, is that time, but also relationships. And through the, maybe reading the same book, those kind of things, is look for those connections, whatever it might be, you're hunting. But if there's any way possible, is stimulate their mind to learn. I think it pays incredible dividends. I know it has in my daughters. I think that's probably one of the reasons we had very little trouble out of them, because they wanted to read. They wanted to learn. You know, they really were trying to learn. Any questions, any thoughts, anybody?
Got married 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
We dated for 4 years, and he's 13, a little boy, and he was difficult dating, but now he's thrilled to death.
Yes.
Daddy, daddy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the toughest thing I can see in everybody his age, is of course is the video age.
Yes.
And they're all totally consumed. And
yes.
This child has, and I think it's common with everybody what I've seen, but I've never had to deal with it, so I'm trying to figure out the way to deal with it, that had really no limits on it. So, you know, he's done 12 hours a day on weekends video games. So.
Well, you're going to have to get him away from it somehow.
So it's just something you have to ease off. You just have to sit down a time and say an hour a night, I guess.
Yes. Well, start limit. You know, the first thing is set limits. And I think you have that conversation. This is not good, and it's not, you know, because I think, you know, the easiest thing to do, I think, you know, reading this and studying and those kind of things, you know, the thing is, if we're video or visually, you know, everything visual, what do? If it's all visual, we don't have to engage your mind most of the time. It comes to us. If somehow, if you can get him to read, get it out of his hand, and probably start with.
He doesn't. He's lacking reading in this.
Well, part of that, you know, you're probably going to have to, you know, my suggestion to that is you're probably going to have to spend some time with him. You're going to have to probably set some time with him and spend some time with him, get him, because it is an addiction to a certain degree, I think, you know, a little bit. You're going to have to get him pulled away from that, and that's going to be a hard thing because he's going to resist. But if you can get him away from that and then eventually can get him to read or something, you know, get the visual coming in, and that's going to be a process.
Read the Bible every night.
Yes.
Good Proverbs.
Yes.
Love it every minute.
Well, read to them. You know, read together.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. You know, probably read together. I mean, work it out. You know, or maybe listen to a book together. You know, those kind of things. You're going to have to. That's going to be slow. And pray for wisdom.
And I have.
You pray for wisdom.
Now he's got the mature video games that his dad gave him. And I finally said, I can't allow this.
Yes.
I can't have these. And He brought them over all stacked in his head, and here they are. Didn't say anything, so it's looking better.
Yeah, it's looking better. There you go. I think that's a start, you know, and just, well, and it's, you know, it's not going to be immediate. It's going to be a process. Always remember, anything you're dealing with teens, It's kind of like, I guess, like the best illustration I can think of this, it's kind of like a ship. Most time, you can't take a ship and turn it 90 degrees, can you? Or maybe 180. You're going to have to take the ship and you're going to have to make a course correction, and it's going to have to be slow. Once you probably get it turned, it's going to be faster. And I think of that a lot with teenagers. You know, if you've got a course correction, you can't turn it around immediately, because it's just going to take some time.
In the military, one of the hardest things to deal with is change.
Yes.
And my bachelor degree program talked about, you know, educating adult learners, and sometimes you have to deal with the change first.
Yes.
I think a lot of times we lack that in our kids. We want them to obey and do just what I say because I say it.
No.
And I know all the cars, sometimes I catch myself doing that.
Yes.
But they need a reason too. They need a motivation, an incentive to change.
So, yes.
You know, like him, paying
yeah.
his daughters to read. That was their motivation to do it, and then eventually it becomes a habit.
Yes.
You can bring that motivation kind of back up on your. Your hand in the motivation, they just start doing it themselves.
Yes. Yeah. And probably some of that, you know, if you can get him to reading, and the other thing is probably that'd be the easiest thing to do if you give him just a little, and then work on that, and then also the thing is, if you get him to read a book, then talk about that book and see where you go and discuss that with him. That gives you a conversation. That gives you a common point. You know, hopefully it's something you read and know the book, you know, or you read it with him. And then you have to develop that. And you have to be innovative in some of that. But, you know, talk about it. Well, what does the book mean to you? You know, and the other thing is about that, they have to engage their brain. Part of that, you know, the reading, I think, for my daughters really stimulated them to think about their relationships. It really did, because, you know, I didn't restrict what they read. They could read anything they wanted to. But even though maybe it's a solitary activity, since they engaged their brain, when they got to be high school and college students, they were very, very careful in picking their friends. They just did. And I think they've learned a lot from reading it in their mind. They think about interaction and those kind of things. Yes?
My biggest thing that I've been dealing with lately with high school was he came to me and said, there's a girl.
Yeah.
See, and I never talked to him about that.
Yeah.
Growing up. When he asked me that day when he came up to me and asked me that, you know, there's a girl, my heart dropped.
Cool. Yeah.
You know, because I didn't have what the teaching to tell him what.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest thing we all know is obvious. The teen pregnancy is high.
Yes.
You know, and I was lost for words. I didn't know what to say. That's what I've been coping with for a while now. You know, that there's a girl that he's interested in. They're interested in each other. But I'm like, oh my goodness, where do I go about this? Where do I start?
Yeah.
You know, and first thing that came up to me, you know, I took a little bit of time to think about it, meditate on it, and I was like, well, respect her.
Yes.
And keep your hands to yourself, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
But that's something that those are the two things that I took. That was the first thing that popped into my head, you know, is respect.
Yes.
You know.
Very good. Yes.
There wasn't where I wanted it to be a lecture.
No.
About, because I never talked to him about that.
Yeah.
How he was growing up, you know, and that's my biggest thing right now. That's what I'm having.
Deal with.
Yeah.
How I did with that, and where I lived, I waited till probably they were 14 or 15. What we did, you know, I did it myself. Part of that, you know, I took my two daughters and we sat down and we had a conversation. The oldest one I gave a pendant, and the youngest daughter, True Love Weights Ring. You know, you can buy them. They don't cost a lot of money, you know, those kind of things. We sit down without their mother, because mother was scared to death. But, you know, sit down and talked about it. And what I did on that, you know, I said, okay, this is the deal. Your sexuality is something that you need to wait for. And it's not because I say so, God says so. And about your purity and your relationship, and you're going to save yourself until you're married. And I never asked them, you know, the thing is, my daughters have neither dated. And one of them's 24 and the other one's 21. I didn't say they couldn't, but I think that's the ideal. And the reason of that is part of that, you know, we had a youth minister that we were growing up, and he went through that, and my oldest daughter took that to heart, not to date until you think you find the person that you even really want to. And it was kind of an amazing thing. Even about a year ago, both of them were in Stillwater, and we were actually, you know, visiting on a Sunday, and we went to a church, and the pastor stood up and said the same thing. He'd actually dated, but he wished he hadn't, and those kind of things. And ideally, you know, that's probably the ideal. And there's not enough time here to probably get into why, but part of that a lot of it is one, they shouldn't date someone who's non-Christian, and you get into that. But the other thing is, yeah. Well, the second thing is about dating and those kind of things. They get the emotional attachment, and it becomes a point where this relationship needs to end. Most teenagers can't end it, even if it hasn't become physical at any point. You know, they get emotionally attached, and then they can't break it off. And that's what that pastor, I think he said it was the most important thing, really, because it comes a point, or maybe this person, there's a point that they know they need to, but if they're emotionally attached, it's hard to break. And that's probably the biggest reason for them not to date. But, you know, I've seen it both ways. And I think that's something you have to work out with them, because that's up to them. But I think you talk about those very things, you know, if you get attached here and those kind of things, because those things can be very damaging, you know. Two, the other thing is to say, you know, some reason the girl breaks it off or whatever, and those, like, especially young men. Yes.
And they decide to break it off. I don't want them to fall into depression or
yes.
Just worry. He can throw himself and forget about what he's dealing with in his life and just set his mind on this one girl.
Yes. You know, that's the second thing. If they do get emotionally attached and the other one breaks it off, then usually they're devastated, especially, you know, if they dated for several years, like some of them 4 or 5 years or maybe longer, if it's been something going on, you know, and everything's fine, you know, they have a good relationship, but at some point she finds somebody else or this or that, you know, whatever it is, then usually they're devastated. And so that's the other reason probably not to allow it. But.
See, and this is where it goes back to the partnership with my wife.
Yes.
Because when my wife heard about it, she was like, oh, that's cute. And I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
With him, because me and my wife started conversating together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I told my wife,
No. Yes.
There's a good book. It's called I Kiss Dating Goodbye.
Yes. Yes, that's another one.
And, he has another one.
Yeah.
It's on courtship.
Old fashioned courtship, yes. Yes. So that's one of those comments you're going to have to say. You know, and the other thing is about some of that, you know, you got to learn, too, that probably teenagers will learn how to push your buttons, too. You know, and some of that, and they may learn to, they can try to push you, especially on dating and some of those kind of things, they can push you. And that's the other thing is, and probably the biggest thing you probably need to learn is parent age, you know, is I'm sorry, I was wrong, please forgive me. That was one of the hardest things for me to learn, you know, especially the daughters. You know, my wife, you know, you have a conversation with them, and the biggest thing you always, I think the one rule, especially about all this teaching is, you always need to build them up, you know, probably. And when you approach them, I think you think about that, especially daughters. Okay. Never make negative comments about what they wear, how they look. Do those things. Always praise them. And I think young men are the same way. Try not to do that. And I was real bad about doing that. And I've done that a time or two. And my wife said, you were wrong. And then I had to go do it. A few times I didn't. But I think that's the biggest thing is you be open. Because part of that, you know, the other thing about this relationship is how you relate to them is how they're going to probably view God, right? Because the qualities of God, you know, and I think about some of that, you know, probably the one that's probably worked on me the most lately, you know, especially in about doing studies and through even some of the Old Testament prophets, about even the book of Jonah, really, if you look at that, it's about the compassion of God, you know, to your children, you know, to express that compassion. You know, the biggest thing, too, you know, talking to other parents, and this came up, you know, we were talking to parents, at church on Wednesday night, you know, the teenage pregnancy thing, and that came up, and then parents were saying, well, if they had to do, you know, how they wouldn't forgive them. And it's like, you know, I said, you're wrong on that. I mean, as far as that, part of that, you know, if they do mess up, by God's grace, my daughters, I'm going to forgive them, and we're going to move on with God. And I think that's the one of the things that you're going to have to think about if you have to face that. You know, and it won't be easy by any means, you know. And I have a couple of friends that are dealing with that very thing right now.
He has a good youth pastor, so me and him are, I took it to him.
Yeah.
I took it to him, and we discussed about it, and we still are.
Good. That's an ongoing thing, you know, for both of you. You know, I think, you know, especially in today's culture, you know, purity is going to be one of the biggest things you're going to face with your teenagers. And the non-dating thing is probably the easiest way to deal with it. But, you know, I do understand that may have to occur. But, you know, the other thing is be prepared to forgive and go on. Especially, like, you know, for me, for daughters. I think, you know, that's going to be the one of the most difficult things to do. Yes. I think that's, yeah.
I think I lacked the conversation with them. You know, we've had the conversation before, you know, and I think as a guy we just tend to just leave it at that and go on. And then like your faith, the time comes and you're like, oh crap, you know, what have I taught him about with it? What have I, you know? I think the big thing is obviously them looking at my life and how I treat my wife. But
yes.
There needs to be that communication.
I think the one thing that made that easiest for me, this is my desire for you, because that your mother and I did that. You know, we didn't have sex before we got married. You know, we did not do that. But it's not me that I want you to live for. I want you to live for God. And for me, that made that conversation much easier. I don't know why. Maybe that's it. Put it off. It took the weight off my shoulders, I guess. You know, and so that presentation was a lot easier for me. You know, especially the first one was harder, but the second one was a lot easier. But because I kind of thought about that, you know, is this is what God desires for you and your relationship, you and your mate. And that was probably, I think that helped me more than anything, really, truthfully. You know, because this is what your mother and I want, but God ultimately is the one that wants this for you and your purity. And God's big enough to take that, you know. And part of that, you know, probably for me, I think this comes back to your relationship with God. I think in some of those kind of things, I think, you know, really search the scriptures, read, you know, and pray about that over time. And I think, you know, God will give you the wisdom and some of the things that you actually need. And maybe in some place you least expect, you know, and some of that. But, you know, continue to talk. You know, that's a difficult thing, but to continue to discuss that, especially over time and over anything, any issue like that. Because some of those, you know, especially if you've got teenagers probably that are, and I'm probably not an expert because I haven't had much trouble with my teenage daughters. I just haven't. And I thank God for that. You know, I really do. You know, I think, you know, some of that obedience and some of those kind of things, I think by investing in them and in the reading and a lot of different things, that paid off. You know, but also, you know, going to church, those kind of things, sitting, you know, the spiritual disciplines, you know, teaching some of those, like, you know, making sure that they do them, you know, talk about, pray together. And the biggest thing, probably the second thing is, if you're not praying with your wife, please do. It's the best thing. You know, I haven't done it even during my daughter's teenage years, but it's just something that we've done the last probably two. It's the best time you'll ever have with God. It really is, if you're not praying with your wife. It really is. Yes.
And the first minister that I had when I first came to Christ, his youngest daughter, you know, he had to stand up at the altar and say, you know, this is my daughter Kayla, and she's pregnant out of wedlock. That was very, very tough. And
yes.
You know that she was raised right, and you know
Yeah.
Raised by a Christian father and all that. And now I have to take my daughter, 14, I have to take her to the doctor because she has this acne problem. You know, it's mm-hmm. to get her ass. So I take her to the doctor. And I go out of the room. First visit to a doctor other than the pediatric doctor I've always taken her to. And so I leave, you know, and she's a teenage girl, and they call back in there, and they say, well, you know, we can treat this, but the type of acne she has, we have to treat this with, the medication we treat this with is birth control. Well, we do. You know, you say, are you responsible enough to handle this, you know? And that goes back to what you said over here on the deal that we're back to where you said, you know, I trust you till you give me a reason not to, you know. And I went ahead and I said, you know, if this is what it takes to treat it, you know, this is what it takes to treat it, let's do this. And I had talked to her and explained to her, you know, don't, you know, this is not an excuse or a green light to go and do it, you know. Those thoughts had never even come to her mind. You know, this is thoughts that I was having.
Yeah.
Because of some of the things that I did when I was growing up, not good. And the way that I approach the situation like he did with his child over there is I have a niece and then my kids have an aunt that are 21 years old, and they got a couple of kids that they you know, they actually one of them has three and they're 21 years old. And see, I explained to them, you know, the schools and the education system has pretty much already explained to the children what causes it. But, you know, I asked them, I said, look at that. And I said, look at this, you know, look at, it's not that those two are bad people, but look at the hardships they have put themselves in. And I said, it's not that they're bad people, but it's all in their decision-making process. This is the decisions they've made. And I said, looking for no college education, no, always sending somebody to watch your child. You know, just all these artists, hardships. I said, you know, you don't want to be that. And I try to tell the boy, you know, you don't want to be to put a female or a girl in this situation. And I said, you don't want to be in a situation yourself. You know?
No.
And it, like he said, it's just a struggle.
Yeah.
All the information that's out there. But, you know, the doctor calls you in and says, hey, we want to put your daughter to work. Just imagine if your mother had taken to the doctor, what kind of reaction I'd had if they called me and asked me that. You know,
yes.
Which I've always taken to the doctor anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the second thing, you know, I'm running close out of time, but, you know, the other thing is to pray for your teenagers, you know, especially, they need it, you know, and then remember that we're not alone. We're in a spiritual battle, and I think that's more and more evident. Now, we had an evangelist at our church last fall saying, you know, that basically he was talking about, you know, the casualties in our church's circles of our children that are casualties. He said, you know, basically he says like this, you know, Satan is real and he's shooting real bullets, you know. And so that's the other thing, you know, about some of those kind of things, about things to pray about, you know. And, you know, I pray for my daughters daily. I have for, 15 or 20 years or longer. I don't know, a long time. You know, part of that, you know, pray for their protection. But, you know, pray, you know, scripture over them too, you know. You know, Romans 15:13. You know, different ones. I name a bunch, but you probably have your own verses. But, you know, I think that's very important. And, you know, especially, you know, in Ephesians, it talks about, you know, we have an adversary, you know, the devil who seeks to destroy us. And we have things around us that we can't see, principalities and powers. I think that's a very important thing. The other, you know, prayer, especially in praying with your wife for your children. I can't emphasize that enough. You know, there's some instances, you know, I know of some people, especially even this particular evangelist, he talked about that, you know, about praying for couples, praying for their children, you know, lost children especially. And, you know, the thing is, and sometimes I always remember too, sometimes if they're not where they're supposed to be, when you start praying, it's going to get worse. You know, so always be diligent in that prayer for them. And I think hopefully that's, you know, one of the things that maybe has blessed me, you know, especially the daughters that I have I've just virtually not had any trouble out of, and I'm thankful to God for that. But the other thing is maybe to, you know, remember in parenting, you're not alone, okay? You're not the first one to have to go through this. And remember that, you know, especially if you think about 1 Corinthians 10:13, you know, no temptation to seize you that's common to man, but God is faithful, you know. You know, to allow you through that temptation, you know. So, you know, I think about that. You know, part of that is, you know, is you know somebody else that's parented teens that have been through that. I think you talk to those about those issues, whatever it might be. Hopefully you have in your area that people are, have teenagers same, you know, part of that, especially if you're like me from a small town. My daughters couldn't do anything without me knowing it because, you know, you're pretty well known with the community. Anything happens, you know, I mean, like she got rear-ended a wreck, you know, and I knew in 10 minutes, you know, before she even got to call me. Those kind of things. It takes community. You know, always says it takes a village to raise a child. So remember, not on your own, in your church family and those kind of things. I think, especially, you know, in the church, teaching them in youth ministry and those kind of things are valuable assets. Talk to them. I mean, you know those issues. You're not alone, especially on that. And there's any number of things. You know, I mean, talk to people. You got problems, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help, you know, from somebody that's older. But also, you know, ask people to pray for you. But, you know, and talk about those issues, teens that have had problems, those kind of things, or you got issues to deal with. You know, try to find somebody to help you maybe see how to work through that. You know, remember, the other thing is don't give up. You know, the thing is about, you know, parenting teens, it's kind of a long haul. And and really, it's probably not just teenagers, you know, really college. To me, we talk about doing teenagers from like 13 to 19, but really, to me, it's like till they get out of college, and then really, you feel like they're on their own. But still, even though you're involved in that, maybe some of those decision makings, but, you know, if you get weary, ask for help. I mean, I've been there, you know. I mean, particularly, you know, about at that point, you know, I wasn't perfect, you know. Particularly me, you know, I was working too many hours, knew a lot of things, had a wreck, you know. And to this point, I was, you know, physically, emotionally, spiritually just done for about 6 months. It took me that long to get over the wreck, but that part of that, you know, I was working too many hours, doing too many things, you know. So I wasn't perfect. And so, you know, those kind of things, you know, I mean, it's, part of that's that daily walk with God. You know, somehow you got through all that, but yet, you know, I wasn't a very good parent for about 6 or 8 months, you know, because I was just in existence mode, you know, and that's where my wife, you know, and helped my daughters get through that. You know, the other thing is this traumatic events, you know. The other thing is like my youngest daughter, my oldest daughter seemed to get sailed through, but we had a period there like my wife's father died, we moved, and those kind of things, you know. Be very sensitive when those kind of things happen. I mean, that's just some of the things that I've had, you know, by experience, you know. You know, to you, you get through it and you try to help your kids get through it. But some of those kind of things, you need to be watching them for several weeks or months after, you know. And part of that, you know, so those transitions, you know, I mean, like us, we didn't move. We've lived in the same town, those kind of things. But if you have to move, those kind of things, be very sensitive to your teenagers when you've got something, some stress, whatever it might be. You know, any number of things. You know, be on the lookout. Know your teen, you know. Talk to your wife, you know, and those kind of things. And that's the biggest thing, you know, is as you go along, don't look up and say, well, you know, get here. You know, be thinking about your teenagers and discuss it with your wife. Where are we at? You know, are they going to be ready when they leave home and get that independence to handle it? Okay. And then there's always time. You know, maybe you only got a little bit of time. There's still, don't give up. There's something you can do, you know, and with God's grace, you can get where you need to be. Any other questions? We got 5 minutes. I'm supposed to let you do evaluation, but I don't even know where they have them here. Yes. It's just a second. Let me give it. I'll give it to you here. The Shepherd Leader at Home by Timothy Whitner. Yeah, Shepherd Leader at Home by Timothy Whitner. W-I-T-N-E-R. Timothy Z. Whitner. It's a very good book. It's really easy to read. It'll give you some really good thoughts about time and different things. There's a couple other ones. Townsend and Cloud have some on like parenting teenagers' boundaries, you know, and trying to deal with issues, you know, particular issues. It's a very long book. If you haven't read it, it's a very good book. You know, it talks about issues like lack of respect, those kind of things, how to deal with them. Townsend and Cloud. You can get those on Amazon or any place like that. They're very good books. There's some others. There's tons of books available, you know, to maybe help your thought process. But, you know, the biggest thing I think, you know, too, is in this right here, Book of Proverbs right there is a great asset, especially talks about wisdom and teaching your children and those kind of things. But, you know, most of it is it's going to take that time. Anything else? Well, let's have a word of prayer, and we'll dismiss it. I think it's time. Father, we just thank you today for this time together to discuss your word and in parenting teenagers, Father. And I just pray that each one of these men at least got one thing today that they could take home and use. And I just pray for their families and the difficult world we're in, that you would protect them and show them the way to raise their teenagers to be godly young men and women. In Jesus' name, amen.